Readers Entertainment presents Book Lights, where we are shining the light on good books.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Can you believe it is September already? How did that happen? If you're in the United States, I hope you had a great Labor Day, barbecued, lots of things. Today, we're right back at it, and I'm very excited for you to meet Craig DeLuey. He is a horror, thriller, sci-fi, fantasy writer, all the genres that I love. And if you haven't met Craig yet, I'm going to read his bio really quick, and then we're going to chat. Craig DeLuey is an author of popular thriller, apocalyptic horror after a holiday weekend. That is a lot to pop out. And sci-fi fantasy fiction. His novels have been praised for their strong characters, action, and gritty realism. Each book promises an exciting experience with people you'll care about in a world that feels real. His works have been nominated for major literary awards such as a Bram Stoker Award, an Audie Award, translated into multiple languages, and also optioned for film. He's a member of the HWA, International Thriller Writers, and IFWA. What is IFWA? Are you there?
IFWA is the Imaginative Fiction Writers Association.
I didn't
it's
even
more
know
like
there
a local.
Was such a thing. Oh, is it
it's
local?
Yeah, it's more like a local writers organization that's in Alberta where I currently live.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like a really wonderful group. Okay.
It is. It's a terrific organization, actually. There are a lot of good writers in it, and there's about 40, 50 people who come to the monthly meetings, and then we all hit a bar after and have a drink, talk shop, and have a great time. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And they all put on an annual conference, too, called When Words Collide, and about 600 people from all over Canada come to it. So it's a pretty great group. By the way, it's great to meet you, Lisa, and thanks for having me, and thanks to all your listeners for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for being here. I did also, for the listeners, put up your website on the Blog Talk page, so if you're listening live there, you can click on that and check out all of Craig's books. And your new book that just came out is One of Us, right?
That's correct, yep. Came out from Orbit in July 2018. It's in hardcover, ebook, and audiobook, and it's available in pretty much every bookstore, physical or online.
That's so exciting. So what can you tell everyone about it so that they need to run out and grab it today, this week?
Well, the first thing I want to say about it is it's a dream come true for me. I could not be happier and more gratified and humbling after the journey I've taken as a writer to get to this point with a great quality publisher like Orbit. I just could not be more thrilled. And so to tell you about the book, it's a dark fantasy. It's a Southern Gothic dark fantasy about the misunderstood monster. So quick synopsis is that it's an alternate history. In the 1970s, there's a disease that produces a generation of monsters that are now growing up and coming of age in ramshackle government-run orphanages throughout the Deep South. And so their kids are monstrous in appearance, and they look like monsters, but they're basically inside, they're basically just kids. And they are now reaching an age where they realize they don't have much of a future. They're rejected and abused in these homes, and they want what's theirs. At the same time, they're starting to develop certain types of powers as they run through puberty that is going to give them the ability to fight back against the society that rejected them. So basically, One of Us it hits a lot of familiar themes in fantasy, the misunderstood monster, whether monsters are born or made, and, you know, the X-Men type of, you know, mutants with powers.
Right.
What's different about One of Us is it takes that to a grittier level, more set in the real world, cast as a Southern Gothic, which is a wonderful, venerable literary tradition in America, where you have topics like the taboo, the grotesque, prejudice, and a society in decay. So it's a terrific story, and it's dark. It makes people think. People have described it as powerful. Author Claire North described it as To Kill a Mockingbird meets The Girl with All the Gifts, which I think nails it.
Okay. I read the synopsis, and I was thinking, is this sort of Lord of the Flies? It's a bunch of kids who, you know, are trying to make their way, or are there adults in it too?
They're adults. It's an ensemble cast, similar to what you'll find in a lot of Southern Gothic fiction written by people like Harper Lee and Cormac McCarthy. And the so the characters give you a really broad sweep of views between a home where the orphanage where the a large number of these plague children live, and the nearby town where, quote, normal children live, and also adults, either in charge of running the home, or they're just going about their lives in the town. And so the kids end up connecting, the plague kids and the, quote, normal kids end up connecting, and this builds a bond of trust, and to say, why is life this way? Why are these children being prejudiced against? And then that basically leads to more things as a child is murdered and a plague child is blamed, and which may be the spark of revolt for these for the plague kids.
Okay, nice. That sounds super intriguing. So everyone should run out and grab that book.
yeah, I hope they will. I hope I didn't ramble through that too much. It's a bit hard to describe. Because there's a lot to it. It's a very powerful book, and it has some strong themes. I think people will find it entertaining in an immersive world, and that they'll walk away from it reflecting on the themes.
Yeah, very cool. Now, is this story apocalyptic also? Is this like the end of the world, or is it just alternate history in the 70s?
It might be apocalyptic. We're not sure where the story ends, but we do. It is more straight up dark fantasy, misunderstood monster in the real world.
Okay, but you've
written a lot of apocalyptic. And while it has horror elements, I wouldn't describe it as horror. It's more mainstream fiction with it's dark fantasy, so which is more mainstream fiction with dark elements, horror elements, rather than, you know, a horror novel.
Right. But you have written apocalyptic stories, right? Didn't I see those on your website?
Oh yeah, I love that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, I cut my teeth in zombie fiction. Those were the first books I wrote that achieved any real commercial success. I had written a psychological thriller that got published back in 2001 and a science fiction novel that got published in 2007 or 8. And those, they were small press and they did pretty good, but that was before the ebook got popular. And then when a writer, other people ask me, okay, we've gotten to this level, how'd you get there? I'm like, well, it's really hard to say, because to the observer, it would look like somebody falling up a flight of stairs. And how did you do that? I have no idea.
Right.
It's a lot of hard work and being at the right place at the right time. There's a really elusive X factor. And in 2010, I think it was, that was when my X factor got really nailed down. I wrote a zombie book when zombie books were just getting big and there weren't very many of us writing them. Now they're everywhere on Amazon.
Right.
But there were only a few of us writing zombie books at the time. And I wrote this zombie book about called Tooth and Nail, about the military versus it's a military versus zombies book. In fact, it's the first one which started a subgenre.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had always been fascinated, I was like, okay, here's this plucky band of survivors in a zombie movie surviving the zombie apocalypse. What happened to the world's most lethal and well-financed military? And it's like,
right.
Well, this is the story about the end of the world and the people who tried to save it, these soldiers in New York City. And it hit when that book came out, when zombies were getting big and the ebook was getting big, and that book sold tens and tens of thousands of copies, which led me to write two more, The Infection and The Killing Floor. They came out from Permuted Press, which then published an omnibus that was in had limited distribution in some bookstores. And those books did extremely well. And that led me to then say, okay, well, that was small press and that was wonderful. And now I want to try and my hand with an agent and try and get into a bigger publisher. And that's when Suffer the Children was published, which is a vampire novel. And in that book, the quickie synopsis is that the nonfiction theme is how far parents will go for their children. As a father myself, I was like, well, I want to write a horror novel, so what's the scariest thing that I can think of? Well, it's if something bad happened to my kids.
So I
wrote a novel about a parasite that turns the world's children into vampires, and they need blood to survive. And they can't get it themselves because when they get blood, they just reanimate and become the children they once were, but only for a short time. So the parents have to keep feeding them blood. So it's the end of the world, but it's because the parents are going out and trying to get blood from each other. And, playing on that whole idea that, you know, a parent will say, well, I put my arm in a thresher for kids, but would he put your arm in a thresher and my arm in a thresher and how many people's arms would he put in a thresher? So it's the purest love in the world perverted into something horrifying, where the parents become all these like Mr. Renfields trying to get blood for their kids, keep their kids alive, doing whatever it will take. And but it's a scary book, and it's really horrifying. And that book did really well, had a lot of critical acclaim. Didn't win any awards, but it was nominated for two big ones, and I was happy just for that. And then after that, I started writing some pulpy dime novel type of submarine thrillers, which I self-published on Amazon, the Crash Dive series, the 6 episodes, and it's basically Horatio Hornblower on submarines in World War II. This young naval officer, he rises through the ranks and fights the Japanese Empire. And real simple, pulpy, quick stories, and they did extremely well. And then that led me to this dark fantasy, One of Us, which I was able to publish for Orbit. So it's, like I said, it looks like somebody falling up the stairs. It's been a really amazing, gratifying journey. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, that's very inspiring and exciting. So the vampire book, Suffer the Children, I love vampire books. I'm a sucker, so to speak. So when that idea came to you, did you look at other things? Like, as soon as you were talking about it, I was thinking of Little Shop of Horrors, you know, only instead of plants as children, and there's a lot of them.
Yes.
Did you figure out how that might have happened? I mean, was there a total eclipse of the sun?
Oh, like what was the origin of it?
Right.
Oh, it's called Herod syndrome because it's a plague that, it's a parasite that kills the children and then brings them back. So they call it Herod syndrome.
Okay.
And I get into the science of it, how the parasite is like other – I was inspired by parasites like the zombie ants, you know. So the fungus gets in the ant and it animates the ant and makes it walk and do things that the fungus needs. Or these grasshoppers are forced to jump in the water and drown themselves so the parasite can propagate and the eggs can lay in the water. So I was really interested in that kind of thing, of how a parasite can actually change behavior. And so the idea here was that the parasite would consume all the children's blood and then reanimate them to get them to get more blood for itself.
More food, right.
And then it would... And then it would reward the host by reanimating it for a while until it consumed all the blood and it would need more. So I didn't get into where it came from because, in my view, a lot of apocalyptic novels, you don't really need to know why. It's just that it happened, it's changed everything, and now you have ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances. And now they will be tested to the bone, everything about them, from the including especially their morality and ethics, and then also their physical survival. And that is what makes it, for me, that's the juice. That's what makes that kind of thing really exciting, that in an apocalyptic story and in a horror story, everything that is comfortable to you is gone. The police, like in a zombie book, the police are gone. And now you're standing at the top of this very high diving board and you have to jump and you're not sure if there's water under you. That's what it's like when you find all these institutions are gone. Whereas in Suffer the Children, all the institutions are now bad. So if you call the police, they may lock you up and take your blood for their kids. And so they become a gang. Everybody else becomes a gang to get blood. And so that is the kind of thing in a story like that that's really exciting to me, not so much trying to find a credible source for whatever reason the pathogen is or anything else. I have done that with some of the stories I've written, but I tend not to. I tend to just say, you know, the apocalypse is here. Here's the catalyst. It's changed everything. Now here's some real people. What's going to happen to them?
Right. Well, and is that probably the intrigue of an apocalyptic story, is that you can yank the rug out of everyone, no police, no army, no, you know, is that part of the draw as a writer to write apocalyptic stories?
Yeah, I think for me, it comes from three things. One, I grew up in the 70s on disaster movies, so the Towering Inferno, the Adventure, and also really weird science fiction like Soylent Green. And then another thing that shaped me was I became a father at the age of 40, so I hit my middle age, my midlife crisis, and had my daughter at the same time. And so I had all these existential fears. I needed to go somewhere, so I put them into a book. And then the third thing that shaped me, my interest in this, was I lived in New York City during the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center. And I was married at the time, and my wife was in the North Tower on the 87th floor, and the plane hit five floors over her head, and she barely got out alive. But I had no contact with her for hours, and I honestly thought she was gone. And she showed up at the door covered in that white dust, and it was like I saw a ghost that was hit by lightning. And that feeling of living through that time and having that experience, really, that combination of personal terror and overall zeitgeist, that the world is changing and you're seeing it happen right now and you can actually feel the world spinning under you, really shaped me to be attracted to that kind of story, the kind of story you find in The Leftovers or in The Walking Dead and that kind of thing, where people are living their lives and boom, everything changes. And now everything is uncertain. And now what are they going to do? What's going to happen to their ethics, their morals, to their physical survival? How are they going to do this? How are they going to protect the people they love? And that's what really excites me about apocalyptic fiction that's done well, that it kind of scratches that itch for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of my favorite Stephen King's is, of course, The Stand. And every time that I am on a highway somewhere and I realize that there's no lights coming from the other way, I always joke with my husband, oh, my God, The Stand happened and we just don't know it yet.
Right.
Because all the people are gone. But that kind of thing is it's terrifying when you think about it, that it could change that quickly. And, you know.
Yeah,
you might
apocalypse,
be left behind.
I think, has two draws for people. There's two types of people who get into it. And one type says, wow, I don't have to pay bills or taxes and have a job. And I can, you know, with zombies, I can shoot people who aren't people, you know. And it's like a video game, right? And there's the idea of being tested. I want to be the last person standing. I survived, right? And then there's the other type of people like me who are like, oh, my God, I reached an age where I feel like I have everything, and now I'm afraid deep down, way in the back of my head, that something might happen and I might lose it. And and that is the kind of apocalyptic fiction I think that's more a draw for me, where you have real people in a real situation going through what is really, it's exciting and thrilling, but it's also for the reader, but for the people in the story, it's actually horrifying because they're losing or at jeopardy of losing everything they love.
Right. Right. Well, when you started out, right, well, I didn't even ask you, what made you start writing? Have you been writing your whole life, or did it hit you later in life?
Pretty much since I was nine. Like I said, I grew up on disaster movies and weird science fiction movies like Rollerball, and I wanted to, what was that other one? The Omega Man, you know, stuff like that. And I ended up, and so I wanted to write stuff like that, and that would kind of blend the two, the Poseidon Adventure meets Soylent Green kind of thing. And I was nine, so I dabbled, you know, I kind of fooled around
right.
with it. And then I read, in high school, I read The Complete Works of Robert E. Howard, and I was like, oh my God, look, this, it was, you know, today I would look at it back on as purple prose and maybe not what, how I would write and no character
right.
arts, or, you know, but at the time for, you know, 14-year-old kid, like it was just blew my mind. And I read every single thing the guy wrote. And said, I want to be him, and I want to write. And I started writing right then and never stopped pretty much my entire life.
So have you always been a writer? Did you do something else first? Did you get a creative writing degree?
I majored in English and communications and had a choice after college of do I want to write or do I want to do TV? I was interning at New Jersey Network, which was a TV station, and
oh,
I was also writing my first novel. And I grew a beard and I wore a cardigan and I was doing the whole, you know,
I was doing the whole thing.
I was doing the whole thing. I was that guy. And and I didn't live in my mom's basement. I actually lived in the upstairs at my mom's house.
Oh, well,
and
there
I did
you
that
go.
For a year. I was a word processor. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I wrote a novel. I was shooting weddings and stuff on my video camera. And I was working for New Jersey Network as a volunteer. And then decided, you know, I had to make a choice. So I sold the camera. I kept the word processor, shaved the beard, got rid of the cardigan, got a job in public relations and started writing for them. And ended up in advertising. I moved to New York, and I was a magazine editor for 7 years for a trade magazine, and then went solo and started freelance writing, doing education and marketing and journalism. And then the fiction writing took off, and I would say my day is split evenly between the two, fiction and nonfiction. And the nonfiction I write about, I specialize in the lighting field. I write about lighting technology and application.
Wow. All right.
Yep.
Well, are you ever considering, do you ever feel like when you're writing your fiction that do you do great lighting in your books? Does that creep
no,
in?
No, although I always use the correct terms. I call it a lamp instead of a bulb, and the pet peeves of the lighting industry. But I try to keep it separate. But what lighting has done for me was by being a professional technical writer, it taught me to don't write just when the monkey's on your back and the muse strikes and you're on fire and then it peters out and then you chase the next shiny object. You have to write
right.
every day, finish your projects, write with discipline. And it really taught me to do that. And it gave me a healthy respect, or I always had it and found its outlet in lighting. But this whole idea of having an engineering side of your brain as well as in a business side of your brain, as well as an artistic side, to be able to really delve into the craft of story, character arcs and structure of the story, and plot things out and learn all the different elements of craft and apply them.
Yeah, because I write paranormal romance and paranormal stories and that kind of thing, and I often have people who tell me, you know, what do you do to be inspired? Well, I show up. You have to show up. Just show up. And once you start, don't you find that once you, even when you're feeling like everything is horrible and you're bleeding for every word, if you do that for like 3 paragraphs, doesn't it start to flow again and you know... And you do
it's
your
just
work.
Like exercise, you know, it's wild horses, but then once you're there, you can't get you out of the gym, right? So
right.
It just feels good. And so, yeah, if you're a writer out there and you're wondering how you can finish your story, just do 5 minutes a day and see where that takes you. And
there you go.
Now, but like I said, now I don't have any problem with it. When I'm ready, I take a lot of notes. I do a lot of research for a book and you know, ponder ideas before I sleep, when I'm in the shower, when I'm driving, that kind of thing, when I'm doing that active dreaming, you know, when my brain's turned off and on at the same time. And I just, and then it reaches a critical mass, and then it just all pours out of me, and I'll write an 80,000 word book in 2 months.
Oh, that's awesome. So are there any other genres that you haven't tried yet that you've been daydreaming about?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, I've done everything I love. I like the crash dive series of thrillers, because historical fiction, military fiction, because it's interesting. I like history, so it's just fun. I'm just writing fun there, and it's fun for the reader, and there's no heavy lifting with theme or anything like that. But I also love the big books, and I love the themes, and the whole realm of speculative fiction is so attractive, horror and sci-fi and fantasy, because you can break boundaries, you can hold up a fractured mirror to the human soul with things like the taboo, the grotesque, with dark themes that make people question themselves, make people uncomfortable, or make people excited and grow. You can really break boundaries and just imagine a whole world transplanted onto ours, or some crazy element, and just see what would happen. It's like throwing, you know, a bull in a china shop and just see what happens, right? Or just throw an ingredient into the mix and see what it tastes like. It just riles things up, and it results in something entirely new and tons of fun to write, and I hope to read as well.
Yeah, very cool. So you don't see yourself writing a hard sci-fi book in the future?
Oh, I would love to do a hard sci-fi book, absolutely. Or an epic fantasy. Anything in speculative fiction is my game. I would absolutely love it. I just had to go with what I think my editor likes, with what I think I can write, where it's a really powerful and good story that I believe in, and that I think people will want to read and enjoy and experience. And so I've written a lot, but, you know, you just go with what's working for you, you know, and you only have so many hours in the day and so many books you can come out with a year.
Right. Well, in the bio I read, it said that you have sold some movie rights. Are there any of your books that are going to be movies?
Oh, yeah, From Your Lips to God's Ears. It's always a challenge with that. You know, the book business is no, 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 yes. And then the film business is yeah, no. And so I've had a short story that I wrote a script from that for 7 years this guy's been trying to get it made. I sold the rights to Suffer the Children. I sold the rights to Paranoia, my first psychological thriller. And One of Us, we're having some conversations. But the option is sort of the easy part. You know, the hard part is big, you know, the big money players one saying, I can make a profit on this, it's worth the risk. It's a whole other, as hard it is to get published, it's even harder to get that, to get to see that story become a movie. So I've got a terrific partner for Suffer the Children, which is First Love Films in Toronto, and they're working really hard. And I hope one day to have some great news about it, but it's not the kind of thing you hold your breath for, because it is very difficult. It's kind of like a mighty wind going through the junkyard and leaving behind a plane you can fly to your dreams.
Right.
In the meantime, I'm just kind of writing the books and kind of just focusing on that. But wow, what a dream come true that would be. And it's a real, real career maker too. It can really be a big difference.
Well, it sells a lot of books if a movie comes out. So put that movie poster.
And in the meantime, for experience, for like a cinematic experience, there's always audiobooks, which I love listening to my own work on audio, because it's like I'm reading it for the first time as a reader. It's just amazing if you have a great narrator, and I've been very lucky to have some.
Yeah, I felt that same way. One of my series got put out in audio, and I listened, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, they got it. They really understood. It was an amazing experience. So So, yeah, I love
audiobooks. You get chills from your own book. It's like, oh, my God, that's so amazing the way they did that.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so for an artist, you know, it's just so thrilling to have that your work kind of made flesh, add more flesh to it, or a totally different medium.
I agree. Well, we're running out of time, and before we go, do you have a newsletter people should sign up for? How can they connect with you, readers?
Well, I have a mailing list, and so I only bug you if a new book comes out. It's at craigdelouie.com, C-R-A-I-G, Delouie, D-I, Louie, L-O-U-I-E.com. And I review books and movies, and so even if you don't dig my books in the end, there's going to be something there you like, which I hope you'll find. And so I hope your listeners will visit. I certainly hope they'll go to their local bookstore and give one of us a try. I wrote it with a fierce joy. It's the best thing I've ever written, and I'm really proud of it. And I hope that a lot of your listeners will share that experience and enjoy reading it.
Yay, that's awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here, Craig, and we will talk to you later.
Thank you for joining us on Book Light.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Be sure to connect with us at readersentertainment.com for articles, blogs, videos, and podcasts that matter to readers.